This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Biomass energy can come from burning all kinds of organic materials, but in New Hampshire, it's really about wood. We're the nation's second most forested state, so there's no shortage of supply, and harvesting all those trees, processing them into chips and pellets, creates jobs. Also, many people see biomass as cheaper and better for the environment than fossil fuels. But as an alternative energy, wood burning is often listed last behind wind and solar. That's because its environmental benefits depend on lots of variables. What kind of wood, how it was harvested, how it's being burned, and perhaps most important, whether it's for heat or electricity. It's another look at biomass today in The Exchange, and let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. We have two guests for the hour. John Gunn is here, research assistant professor at UNH in forest management. He was a former senior program leader at the Manomet Center for Conservation Sciences. And John Gunn, it's really nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome. Happy to be here.
Also with us, Charlie Niebling, a partner with Innovative Natural Resource Solutions, which helps New Hampshire businesses, nonprofits, and government clients in natural resource management and policy. And Charlie Niebling, it's been a while. Welcome back.
Thank you very much, Laura.
Well, Charlie, I'll turn to you first. Give us the elevator pitch. If somebody asked you, Charlie Niebling, biomass, good or bad for the environment, what would you say?
I'd say we grow a lot of it in New Hampshire. It's local. It is renewable. We have a 400-year history in the state and many thousands of years before that with Native Americans using wood as a fuel. It's in our backyard. When we spend our money on this fuel, we keep our dollars local, and all of those are good things.
So you mentioned a lot of economic benefits. What about the environmental benefits?
Essential to the practice of forestry in the state, and good forestry is good conservation. We need markets for private and public landowners to justify the carrying costs of keeping forest land as forest land. Those markets range from markets for the really high-value products like sawlogs and veneer to the low-value products like firewood and pulpwood. And we need markets for the full suite of products in order for landowners to practice good forestry.
So in order to keep New Hampshire forested, you're saying, Charlie, that there needs to be markets for those forest products. Otherwise, landowners might do something else with that land, clear it or whatever.
Absolutely. If they don't have an economic justification for the ownership of forest as forest, what are their options? Well, subdivision and development for the most part. And New Hampshire is actually losing forest land now after decades and decades of growth in forest land, not because of forestry practice, but because of loss of forest land to permanent development.
So good because it's local, you would say. Good because it helps keep forested land forested. What about the smoke, Charlie?
Well, you make emissions anytime you burn anything. And the question is, what technology are you going to deploy to turn the energy in wood into useful energy? That technology has come a long way. We are not talking about your grandfather's wood boiler anymore. We are the beneficiaries in this region of decades of research and development investment, mostly in Europe, in modern, clean, efficient wood-burning technology. So it's come a long way. It's a lot cleaner than it used to be.
So your elevator pitch, John Gunn, please. Biomass, good or bad for the environment?
As a scientist, I always say it depends.
kind of like an economist.
But we know, energy wood or, wood coming out of a harvest that's going into an energy market is, it's been part of the mix in New England for a long, long time. And we know how to manage forests. And so I think, as long as we're doing the things that are responsible, that we know how to do from a forestry perspective, making sure that we're protecting water and maintaining biodiversity, having all those elements in place, involving a professional forester and a professional logger in the operation, those are all they're all things that we know how to do and need to keep doing. So from that perspective, for years I've been comfortable using wood to heat my home if I know where the wood comes from. And that's, I think, to Charlie's point that, it's a local local source, and knowing where it comes from is a key component to that.
So you're focusing, like Charlie did, on the way that the wood is harvested. If it's done in a sustainable fashion, we're not seeing the ugly clear cutting that we saw a century ago and all the associated problems with that, water quality and so forth.
Well, clear cuts by themselves are not necessarily a problem, but looking at the landscape and how the forest as a whole is managed, I think is the important part of it. And so, if energy wood is going to be part of your harvest, you need to take those precautions as you would with harvesting any kind of product from an operation.
So here's an email from Kelly that came in yesterday, who says there's a huge difference in the environment and economic impact between using wood biomass for heating, aka thermal, versus electric production. And we're going to talk about both this hour. Kelly says, when talking about all the issues related to biomass energy, it's natural to lose track of whether one is referencing thermal or electric production. But, and she emphasizes here, it's a really important distinction to maintain throughout the conversation. Kelly, thank you so much for the email. And guys, let's talk about that. John, you first. So just my cursory reading of the literature, it seems like biomass for thermal, not so bad. Biomass for electric generation, people have some problems.
Well, again, that depends, where you are in the country as well. I think there are different aspects of that. One is the type of material that's being used to make that energy. If it's round wood or whole trees and whole tree chips that are being used to go into to make something like pellet for heat, that's one part of the equation. The other part is, are these is it the tops and limbs from an operation that's again being chipped as part of a whole tree, and then that ultimately relates then to the efficiency of how the wood is being used to make energy. So making electricity out of wood is a less efficient process than generating heat from something like pellets. So I think that's part of what Kelly's referring to, is that when you're looking at impacts to the atmosphere, that's where that starts to matter in that equation.
Okay, so less efficient. So does that mean dirtier when you burn wood to make electricity?
Dirtier in the respect of more carbon dioxide per unit of energy that's generated.
I'd love to hear your thoughts too, Charlie Niebling, on that distinction that Kelly points out. It's an important one.
Sure. Well, both generating electricity and heat have their place in New Hampshire and in this region. We have in New Hampshire a 35-year roughly history of utility-scale power generation using wood as a fuel, and that was driven largely by policy in the late 70s and early 80s. More recently, with the construction of the Schiller Station in Newington and the power plant in Berlin, New Hampshire's continued commitment to that resource and that form of development. I think going forward in the future, the power generation, electricity generation will be married with production of heat in what's called combined heat and power, and probably smaller scale facilities than the fleet of power plants that we have operating in the state today. I think there are going to be more community scale distributed generation where we use both the energy in the wood to make both electricity, and we use the heat that is spun off by that generation process.
So right now, New Hampshire has two big wood-fired power plants.
Two big
Charlie.
Ones and
yeah.
six smaller ones.
Okay. I didn't realize there was that many.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and they presumably burn cleaner than if they used coal or gas or oil?
They have very sophisticated emissions controls. As I said earlier, you make air emissions anytime you burn anything, whether it's a fossil fuel or wood. Wood has virtually no sulfur in it. So one of the issues that goes away compared to fossil fuels is sulfur dioxide, which is an important component of our contributor to acid rain. You do make nitrogen oxides. You do produce carbon dioxide when you burn anything. That's just the fundamental nature of combustion of any carbon-based fuel. It's all a matter of how you control the emissions coming out of the stack. And New Hampshire's done a pretty good job. And I give a lot of credit to the Department of Environmental Services for their regulatory approach to those issues.
So that's interesting. So wood energy, I never thought about it this way, Charlie. Wood energy is not a fossil fuel, but it is a carbon-based fuel.
It's would be referred to as a biogenic carbon as opposed to geologic carbon. A fossil fuel is carbon that's been stored under the ground for hundreds of millions of years, and is upon combustion, that carbon is released into the atmosphere. The carbon in wood has been there for 40 to 60 to 80 years.
So, John, I'm going to ask you, in your role sort of as a professor and kind of weighing all the pros and cons, if wood energy releases maybe less carbon pollution, smoke, whatever you want to call it, but still releases some, why, pardon the pun, bark up this tree? Why not just go for solar and wind, which don't emit anything?
Well, it all comes down to this action of the forest that through photosynthesis, where carbon dioxide is grabbed out of the atmosphere by the trees. And,
right, trees
and,
suck up carbon dioxide.
Right,
we learned that in middle school.
And that's a key component to this whole question. So that carbon then is stored in the branches and leaves and trunks and roots of the trees. And so as a tree grows, it continues to store more carbon. And so we know how to manage forests in a way that allows the forest to maintain that growth. And so if we look at, as my research does, is to look at how we can best use forests to help address this climate change issue. This question of carbon storage is part of that. So, we can look at one pathway where we're growing trees older and bigger, and we know that older forests can store five times as much as a typical acre of forest around here. But at the same time, if we use that wood, we harvest it and put it in products in lumber that ends up in a building for 50 or 100 years, or if we use it to make some kind of energy that displaces fossil fuel, but we continue to grow trees out on the landscape, that has a role as well. And so kind of the complicated math then is to understand some of those trade-offs.
Right. So if those trees are doing such a wonderful job sucking up carbon, shouldn't we just leave them there?
In some cases, it makes sense to do that, yeah. But I think there are other, from a social and economic perspective, there are many other reasons that we want to manage forests. And so if we can try to balance that on the landscape of keeping lots of carbon stored in older forest and managing a certain portion of the forest where we can use those products in ways that are also beneficial to the climate. I think those are the things we need to figure out.
Lots more to dig into, guys. Let me invite our listeners to join us as well. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. Today in the exchange, we're taking another look at biomass energy. In New Hampshire, that pretty much means burning wood. We're looking both on the thermal home heating side, which has grown greatly in popularity, and also using wood for electric generation. You can join us with your comments, questions, concerns, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And guys, in a few minutes, we're going to talk to somebody, a senior science writer at Climate Central, who has a lot of concerns about woody biomass, including, Charlie Niebling, the fact that Europe is jumping on this to meet their climate goals. He's got some pictures on his website of some pretty ugly looking plants that have huge sort of dirty clouds over them. So I just wonder if this is really the environmental hope that we hope that it is.
Well, the issue that John has written extensively about is the development in the last 6 or 8 years of a export pellet industry in the American South. That is the Gulf Coast states and the southern yellow pine states, as I call them, driven largely by carbon and climate policy and renewable energy policy in Europe. This is an industry that has grown rapidly. It's still a fraction of the size of the pulp and paper industry in the American South, which has declined significantly.
So they're looking for new markets for their wood, just like we are.
Correct. So even though they represent a sizable new market for wood, it's still a fraction of the decline that we've seen in the American pulp and paper industry in the South. Yeah, there are some interesting aspects to that whole policy and some contradictory aspects, frankly. It's always troubled me that a ship full of pellets is headed to Europe and passes a ship carrying heating oil to the port of Boston in the middle of the night to keep homes in New Hampshire and Massachusetts warm. Well, why not use that fuel domestically instead of helping the Europeans solve their climate issues?
Well, and two questions out of that. You know, is all this biomass that they seem to be using over there helping them solve their climate issues? If you look at the pictures, it doesn't look very pretty.
They seem to believe so because it's government policy, EU policy, United Kingdom policy that's driving all of it. And until that policy changes, you're going to continue to see this market expand.
The EPA's Science Advisory Board, John Gunn, and I'm sure you know this, has repeatedly warned that not all biomass is carbon neutral. I think, Charlie, maybe you sent me some information that said it's not carbon neutral, but it's carbon better. How do you assess it, John Gunn? Is biomass carbon neutral?
For me, I think you need to do the math because it's not always a good thing in terms of its climate impact. So it really depends on the context of the type of forests that are being harvested, the type of material that's being used from those forests, the kinds of risks of disturbance like fire and insects that could come around in the landscape. All of that matters in kind of how you understand what the answer to that question is. And so I think a blanket assumption that it's all climate neutral or carbon neutral is not helpful because it really depends on where you are and how you're using it.
So why does the type of wood matter so much to, now I know you're a forester, but to the uninitiated, it just seems, you know, wood is wood.
So if you're, as many folks will claim, if you're using just tops and limbs from an existing harvest that takes place, that has implications in terms of typically if that would have been left on site in the woods to decompose on the forest floor, and if you're taking that and instead making energy out of it, it has a shorter time frame where you're going to start to see that carbon benefit, because in the first scenario it was going to essentially be emitted anyway because it was rotting on the forest floor. And so there's, you know, that you balance that there and it, you know, becomes neutral in the eyes of some. But if you're...
Oh, so it's all about this forestry cycle. You really have to understand that to assess this.
It is. It's, yeah.
The cycle of a tree and what it would have done if you had left it alone.
And that's the hard thing to understand is that we often talk about these scenarios where we're looking at what would have happened without the biomass energy use of that wood and compared to what happens when you do use it. And that involves also understanding the fossil fuel energy that you're replacing.
Well, I have a much more basic question, though. I mean, with coal, people talk about certain types of coal burn more cleanly than others. So certain types of wood, that also is a factor, burn more cleanly than others. Is that right?
It's less of a factor in terms of carbon dioxide emissions in terms of that kind of bigger question.
I see. All right. Lots of calls coming out of a short break. And we will go to John Upton. He's a reporter who's been covering climate science, has some big concerns about the impact of wood burning on the environment. All that's coming up. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, biomass energy in the Granite State. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Send email to exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. 7777. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Our guests in studio are John Gunn, Research Assistant Professor at UNH in Forest Management, and Charlie Niebling, a partner with Innovative Natural Resource Solutions. We're looking at biomass energy both in terms of home and office heating, and also in terms of electric generation. As we've learned, New Hampshire has a couple plants that produce electricity using wood. 1-800-892-6477 is the number. And John and Charlie, let's go to our listeners. And Rick's calling from Milan. Hi, Rick. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi.
Go ahead, Rick.
Well, I'm a retired logger, and my niche was low impact. I use horses. And one of the reasons I'm retired is the return for the biomass, roundwood biomass, our chips are so low, I couldn't afford to do it. And my question is there anything in the future plans to give some kind of economic incentive to people doing, what would you say, low-impact or environmentally responsible logging?
And you used to use horses, Rick. Is that
did.
What you said? Wow. Okay. Thank you so much for the call. Go ahead, Charlie Niebling.
No question that the value of wood used in electric generation in particular has dropped in the last couple of years. And that has everything to do with what's happened with electricity markets in the region. Cheap natural gas coming out of the Marcellus Shale region means cheap electricity. And the power plants, the wood-fired power plants, are challenged to compete in this economic climate and in this energy market without support and assistance in one form or another. The major form of assistance here in New Hampshire is the ability for these plants to sell renewable energy certificates on the power that they generate. And that's a function not only of New Hampshire policy, but policy around the region, which is likely to get quite a bit of attention in this session of the legislature.
So the societal benefits you talked about of wood energy, Charlie, you know, jobs, sustainable, local resource, all that. But then there's pure market forces, which are, as you say, natural gas is really cheap.
Yes. When these plants were built, most of them, they benefited from long-term guaranteed rates. Those rate orders have since gone away or come to an end, and they're now much more at the mercy of the marketplace. And right now, electricity is relatively inexpensive with all the natural gas generation we have in the region.
Well, and we talked earlier, John Dunn, about, you know, biomass, whether it's carbon neutral or carbon better. How does it compare to natural gas? Charlie's right. A lot of, you know, wood and other types of energy sources have been replaced by natural gas because it's so cheap.
Well, one example is a recent study that I worked on with a colleague on behalf of the Northern Forest Centers to look at kind of that question related to wood pellet heat in the region. And so,
how does it compare to natural gas?
Yeah, and you know, it's when we look at the current landscape and the harvests the way they are now and a typical way a pellet is made with some component of sawmill residues as well as roundwood, it's the emissions are less than half than getting the same amount of heat from natural gas and heating oil as well. And so, you know, that benefit is clear on the heat side. I haven't looked at that question here in New Hampshire on the electricity side.
So now getting down to, you know, the individual person, the individual homeowner, and you talked about the comparison between wood and natural gas. I have some friends that over the holidays got a natural gas stove. So it looks like a wood stove. It's very well crafted. It's very lovely to look at. It has some fake ceramic logs in it so that they emit heat. They love it. It heats up the whole downstairs, basically, after a while. And, you know, Charlie, I'm going to look at you first. They said, you know, it's not as messy. They weren't as concerned about it. They're concerned about smoke. So at a time when you and others would like to see New Englanders moving more towards wood pellets, some people are saying, I'm a little worried about that.
No question that fossil fuels are very convenient and user-friendly. But so is wood with new technology. We have fully automated wood pellet boilers and chip boilers. The homeowner never sees the fuel. They have the same thermostat on their living room wall that they tweak every morning to turn the temperature up. The only difference, really, the only difference is they have to empty a little ash container every month or so. Because you're burning a solid fuel, you have ash to deal with that you don't with a gas or a liquid fossil fuel. So the technology's come a long way. The Europeans realize that if wood is to become a mainstream heating option, it's got to be as convenient as oil and gas. And they've figured out how to do that.
Well, thank you very much for the call, Rick. We appreciate it. Again, the phone number, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. We're talking about biomass today on The Exchange, both in terms of home heat and also electric generation here in the Granite State. You can join us, 1-800-892-6477. And guys, joining us now on the phone is John Upton, senior science writer at Climate Central, with more than a decade of international reporting and global climate policy, oceans research, wood energy. John Upton, really nice to have you. Thank you for your time.
It's great to be with you this morning.
Well, so when is biomass energy harmful, John? In all instances or some instances?
It's certainly, in some instances, it's extremely harmful. I spent a lot of last year reporting on the use of biomass energy in Europe. I visited Drax Power Station in England, it is Western Europe's biggest power plant. It's as big as a nuclear power station. It was built to burn coal that was being dug out of the area. It's now being converted to run on wood.
So people would say, hey, that sounds great, going from coal to wood. That's got to be cleaner.
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, it sounds nice. The problem is that the demand for wood is so great that they're actually cutting down a lot of trees, a lot of them coming from America, shipping them across to Europe in order to provide that fuel. So once you get this kind of industrial scale, this huge scale biomass energy, the climate impacts are really terrible. You're losing forests that were sequestering carbon. You're losing them. You're losing their ability to absorb the carbon, and the forestry industry will tell you that it's the opposite of what I'm telling you right now. But the fact of the matter is, if you cut down a tree and use that for fuel, then you're losing that that tree as a way of sucking carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, and you're also sending all of its carbon up into the atmosphere, and it's actually much more polluting from a carbon dioxide perspective than coal. But that's not what you guys are talking about there in New Hampshire. You're talking about something very different. You're talking about local biomass, and that's a very different situation because, you know, I've been to a lot of operations, small little power plants where they are basically using the scraps of the timber industry. It's a waste management tool. They can use these burners to get rid of waste that might otherwise be burned off, and that would be polluting as well.
So part of the problem is large scale versus local, John, you seem to be saying.
It all comes down to scale. If you have a small local operation that's running on genuine waste wood, then sure, yeah, I mean, it's not as good as solar or wind. It's still going to put a lot of pollution into the atmosphere. It'll make you cough. It'll make some people sick. But, you know, what is the alternative? The alternative is to continue, using fossil fuels and coal and it's not the same big issue when you're talking about local operations as when you're talking about big ones. That said, there can be some impacts, especially when you start subsidizing some of these operations, because once you start introducing subsidies, they can start going after non-waste wood to put in the boilers. They can start cutting down trees. They can start competing with existing industries. They can actually increase deforestation. But at a local level, there can be a lot of benefits to biomass energy, particularly while we transition to a cleaner energy industry that's based more on solar, wind, and large industrial batteries.
So we've talked a lot about the term carbon neutral, carbon better, John. I mean, what's your take on this?
Well, I would forget the term carbon neutral. It is true in a very small number of circumstances. Those are very special circumstances. And it's basically when the fuel would have been burned anyway in the open and without pollution controls. So I would really put the carbon neutral idea out of your mind completely. Generally, it is better for carbon dioxide emissions if you're talking about local waste wood being used. But if you're talking about any kind of large-scale industrial operation, you're talking about greater carbon dioxide emissions than coal, simply because it's just, it's not as energy dense. Anybody who has around a campfire or who has a fireplace knows how many logs you need to keep a fire burning for a good number of hours. It's not a great fuel when it comes to efficiency.
So we've been talking mostly about your concerns related to large-scale industrial biomass energy production. John, what about people using wood pellet stoves in their homes? We see a growth of that here in New England.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, that's not as it's not as ideal as having, you know, solar panels on your roof and a battery and so forth. But it's not a major concern. It's not a major environmental concern. It's not something environmentalists get too riled up about. It's small scale. It's small impact. And I've been to one pellet mill in New Hampshire, and I've seen the operations there. And you know, there's everything from old furniture, all kinds of different types of waste wood being compressed into little pellets and then sold to you know, residential customers. And it's you are going to pollute the air. You will. Anybody who has seen a chimney knows how much smoke goes out there. So I'm not saying it's good for the environment at all. But you know, at the scale we're talking about, and some of the feedstocks, the fuels that we're talking about, it's just not a major concern.
So on the homeowner level, is it better for folks to heat their homes with oil or natural gas, or is it better to use wood pellets?
I would really just say that the difference is so minor that it should just be up to the homeowner to decide what's best for them. Are you talking about, I mean, if you're talking about air pollution, then of course natural gas will put out less air pollution than wood pellets. But then, you know, you have to, there's a lot of methane leakage when you get the natural gas piped around and fracked and sent to your home.
And methane is a powerful greenhouse gas,
A very powerful greenhouse gas, yes. Excuse me.
Wow. Well, John, it's really hard to sort it all out. I mean, in talking with you and our other guests, there's so many, it depends.
Well, there are. So I would just keep in mind, if it's small and local, then it's not a big deal. It's not, you know, you're not a champion of the environment for using wood energy at that scale, but you're not causing huge impact. But once you start looking at these large industrial operations, if they have to start cutting down trees to fuel their furnaces, then, yeah, you're talking about some pretty terrible impact.
All right. John Upton, really good to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Take care.
That's John Upton, senior science writer at Climate Central. And in about 10 minutes, we'll talk to Richard Roy. He's at the Schiller Station in Portsmouth, which is a big biomass electric plant. But both of you, before we go back to our listeners, John Gunn, you first. You know, again, we hear from John Upton, who's been looking at these issues for a long time. He says you're not really a champion of the environment with this.
Well, I'm not sure about I think there's... he's thinking of a really small scale, but I think there is a scale where you can be a champion for the environment. And I think the pellet facilities in New Hampshire and the rest of New England are at a scale where many 5,000-6,000 homes could be heated from the production from one single pellet facility. And that's not just using waste wood. It's using wood that in the absence now of the pulp and paper markets that have gone away, that wood has a home.
Pardon me for interrupting, but what is waste wood? Because there have been some proposals for biomass plants where the concern has been that they would be burning construction materials, which may emit all sorts of, you know, toxins that you don't want from the paint and so forth. So what is waste wood?
I think that's an important question. I think people have different definitions of that. I think some people refer to, as you say, the demolition wood and it sounded like John was talking about, you know, old furniture and things, but others may refer to the kind of really low quality material coming from a harvest or the tops and limbs and calling that waste wood because it was just left in the forest. And so that definition is important, but that's not really how pellets are being made, at least for the heating side. Charlie can weigh in on that.
Yeah, go ahead, Charlie. Again, you know, John Upton's got his take on the environmental benefits of this. He doesn't seem to think that they're very good.
Right, but he's written primarily about the export pellet industry in the American South.
You said you had concerns about as well.
The forests of the American South are America's industrial forests. Tremendous amount of wood and wood products come out of that region. Something like 80% of all the wood that we consume in this country and pulp and paper comes from the American South.
So why is that? Because the trees grow so quickly?
They grow fast and they have the mix of species, soils, climate, precipitation that is very conducive to rapid growth of trees, and they have the right species. So it's a very different situation than it is here in the Northeast. John also talked about scale and local. And what we have in New England is a use of this resource at a scale and very close to where the trees are being grown that makes sense, and that does have significant economic and environmental benefits for the region.
So again, scale matters.
Scale matters.
Although even at a small level, he said, it's fine, but you're not a champion of the environment. Do you think you are?
I respectfully disagree. I absolutely disagree with him about that. It's all about the technology. It's all about the forestry that produced the wood. It's all about keeping your fuel dollar local. All of that has significant benefits for New Hampshire.
Well, we've got two emails that agree with you on that point, Charlie. Here's Cara in New London. As someone who grew up 20 minutes from the Springfield biomass plant, I've always found it to be a part of the way of life in New Hampshire. Cara says, I think a more appropriate analogy for clean energy use should be the same way we now think about organic and fresh fruits and veggies. Organic and natural is all great, Cara says, but if you can't get or afford that option, local is the next best thing. She says we should be thinking of this as a clean energy continuum and not a black and white option. What do you think, Charlie?
Completely agree. How many shows have you done over the years where you've tried to ferret out the complexities of the choices that we make with energy?
Probably
here's
time.
A bottom line.
Yeah.
The more local, the more renewable, the better. And wood, if managed responsibly, is a renewable resource. It certainly is local. It's part of the culture and fabric and economic history of this state, and it can continue to be so if we use it responsibly.
Well, so, Cara, thank you for the email. But to that point, John, on sort of weighing out what's better and so forth, John Upton said that, he didn't have a problem with people using wood pellet stoves as a transition to clean fuels, clean energy sources, wind and solar. If we continue to develop the ability to use wood more effectively, more efficiently, does that get us off the hook for going, 100% clean? I mean, the solar panels on your roof aren't going to emit anything.
I think a lot of that depends on how the forest marketplace evolves over time. I mean, the energy wood by itself is not going to support a forest economy, and so we need to have strong markets for the higher value products, thinking about all these, the long, slow growing, beautiful oak trees, and sugar maple, and all those elements, that needs to be part of it. So if there's a diverse forest products marketplace, I think the energy side can continue to play an important part for the long haul.
I'm asking you, though, to make the comparison. I mean, again, if everybody's saying wood pellets, great, they're so environmental, is that putting off, there's still some emissions, is that putting off the transition to, 100% clean fuels?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think the economics of energy will drive ultimately where we end up.
Okay. We will talk more in just a moment, and we'll turn to someone who works at Schiller Station in Portsmouth, which is a big biomass energy plant over there. We'll also take a lot more of your questions and comments, so stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, burning wood for alternative energy. We're looking at it both in terms of home heating and also larger electric generation. Join us with your questions, comments, personal experiences, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. So, Charlie Niebling, I'd like your thoughts, too, on the question that I asked John Gunn. So if there is a lot of investment and improvements in terms of using wood for energy, does that put off investment or get society off the hook in investment for completely clean energies?
There is no such thing as a completely clean energy. First of all, if you look at life cycle analysis, if you don't just look at the
emissions,
the technology that is producing the energy that is being used, but how we got to that point. There's no such thing. we make choices every day about all of the energy that we use, and we are well advised to utilize all energy efficiently and as cleanly as possible, and to use as little energy as we possibly can through investments in efficiency. That said, wood has a place in this mix. It has for the last 400 years and thousands of years before that. It will continue to going forward. No question with battery technology that solar, wind, and other renewables are going to continue to grow and become a more important component of our total mix and eventually get us to a point where we need to be, which is off of fossil fuel entirely.
Let's take some more calls, gentlemen. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And bring another voice into our conversation now, guys. Richard Roy is with us. He's a forester in charge of biomass fuel at Schiller Station in Portsmouth. And Richard, good to have you. Thank you for being with us.
Yes, good morning, Laura. Nice to be with you.
So from what I understand, Schiller Station burns wood and coal. How does that work?
We have three different boilers here, two coal and one biomass boiler. 10 years ago, we retired one of the coal boilers and built the state-of-the-art new boiler island, and we use that for the biomass section and run the coal units intermittently, depending on markets, on the other side.
So when you're running the wood-fired generator then, is that what you're saying?
That's correct. The wood-fired boiler house is base-loaded, basically, and it runs all of the time.
And when energy demand is really high, that's when the coal burners kick in.
That's correct.
How much cleaner is the wood burner versus the coal burner, Richard?
Well, the technology has gotten better over the years with respect to boiler design. This boiler is not to get into the engineering of it too much, but it's a circulating fluidized bed boiler, and it burns at a lower temperature than other industrial boilers do. And it's important because if you can keep temperatures below 1,700 degrees or so, you're producing less oxides of nitrogen. And this boiler actually, when it was commissioned, cut the EPA standard for NOx emissions in half.
NOx is what? Just remind us.
Oxides of nitrogen, it's called NOx. So when you burn something, you emit carbon, water vapor, and so on, and NOx is one of those emission standards, and this boiler cut that standard in half. So boilers built after this one had to meet that standard as well.
Where does your wood come from?
Three states. If you look at us geographically, we're on the seacoast, so close to Maine, close to Massachusetts. So 60% of our wood comes from New Hampshire sources, 15% from Maine, and the remainder, 25%, from Massachusetts.
At what point, if ever, Richard, and you can tell me, do you switch off those two coal burners and just do wood? Is that a possibility?
That's mostly what happens. The coal units burn intermittently and only when markets are high, and that's typically midwinter, midsummer. Spring and fall, the coal units are not running. So it's mostly the wood unit that runs.
Well, if the wood unit is running so well, as you describe, why not just make the other two wood units? Why even go to coal at all?
Well, historically, coal has been part of the mix in power generation throughout the United States. These boilers have been here a long time. Logistically, you get into difficulty with truck traffic. You get into can a resource furnish you with that much material from a smaller area? So you get into those questions that and you get into economics as well.
So truck traffic, meaning if you switch to all wood with no coal, you'd have to buy so many more wood chips that you'd have a problem with truck traffic?
Well, you'd have an increase. Truck traffic is always a question in society's mind with respect to establishing an industry. People are concerned with truck traffic. So here in Portsmouth, you know, we're in an urban area, and truck traffic was one of those concerns that were addressed during the commissioning of this unit. So if you built another one, if you built another 50 megawatt station like we have here, you'd double the truck traffic, and that might be an issue for some people.
Does Eversource, Richard, have plans to build other biomass plants around the state to expand what you're doing? Not currently.
No.
What do you think the future is of this biomass as electric generation?
I think it has its place, just like other forms of generating electricity. I think here in New Hampshire, we do it very well. The resource is healthy. It is vibrant. If you look at New Hampshire's forests and the amount of growth put on those forests every year, for all harvests, Laura, for sawlogs, pulpwood, biomass chips, pellet chips, all of that stuff, we're only harvesting about half of what grows.
So there's a lot of potential out there.
There's potential, but you need to use the products correctly. We don't chip saw logs here to make biomass fuel. Economically, it isn't supported. A landowner is paid based on what you're purchasing off of their property, and different products bring different prices. If you convert those prices to a per-ton basis, a landowner will get paid $1 per ton for biomass, but he might get $20 to $40 per ton for saw log material.
So you're not gonna, lumber and so forth.
You're not going to take a $25 or $30 product and turn it into a $1 product. It just isn't done.
Well, Richard, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
That's Richard Roy Forrester. He's in charge of biomass fuel at Schiller Station in Portsmouth. And guys, let's go right back to our listeners. Lots of people want to jump into our conversation. Dan is in Madison. Hi, Dan. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning.
Morning.
This is Dan Stepanowskis. I know both John and Charlie. I've been a forester in New Hampshire since 1981. I was involved with the biomass industry in that I used biomass contractors when biomass first came on in the early 80s in New Hampshire. And I just saw a lot of inefficiencies with the large machinery hauling out this very low grade of wood. And when we think about biomass, we have to consider the carbon footprint. The carbon footprint of producing biomass is very high in that you have large skidders. The skidders that are pulling out wood for biomass are generally very large, are larger than your standard skidders that are used in forest management. And then you have to chip the wood, and then you have to put it in a tractor trailer and take it to the market.
And that truck traffic that Richard Roy just mentioned. Go ahead.
Yeah. So you've got a lot of that. And a lot of these tractor trailers now, and this is partially due to the fact that some biomass plants have closed, are taking this with an hour and a half ride.
So, Dan, as a forester, one would think that you would support biomass because it, you know, helps create markets for forest products, but you seem to be saying it's not so great.
Well, as far as the forest itself, the forest ecosystem, there's nothing great about it. We should try to imitate nature, and limbs and things have always been left on the ground, and they've fallen down in nature. And if you think about the forest, everything falls down. It goes back into the soil. It grows back into new trees. So it's a nutrient circle.
That's the
it
cycle,
keeps going.
Right? Well, Dan, let me get our guest to jump in, and thank you so much. So I'm going to turn to you first, John. Here we have a forester saying, you know, there's a lot of problems with this.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, Dan brings up some good points, and I think part of the question, the emissions from the harvesting and the transport, actually it ends up being a relatively minor component of the total emissions of the system. But I think maybe the more important aspect of that is having sustainability standards and guidelines around how material comes out of the woods, and I think having appropriate harvest practices for the sites and having some framework where there's accountability in place for the users of that material, whether it's being used for energy or pulp and paper, I think it's critically important for the equation to continue working out in favor of the atmosphere and the forest is that we maintain those harvest standards and maintain that growth to harvest ratio.
Well, Dan, thanks for the call. And here's an email from John in Portsmouth who has a similar theme. John says, your guests act as if you can continue to cut wood off the same land over and over, but every time you cut a tree and remove the wood, you are also removing the minerals contained in the wood. He says, surprisingly, most of the material in the wood actually comes from the air, but the rest has to come from the soil. He says, there's really no way to replace those minerals. So each time you, quote, harvest the trees, you wear out the soil, eventually get to the point where nothing will grow very well in that section of land. John says, most of the land in New Hampshire has been cut two or three times over now. You can't keep cutting and removing wood without wearing out the land. So, John, I think I'll turn to you again. You're a forester. What do you think?
I think there are definitely in certain soils that are at high risk, that, you know, there are things to be concerned about there. It's difficult to do that kind of research, soil, evaluating kind of soil impacts, which is quite variable. It's really hard to tease apart some of the harvest impacts and we haven't been at it for very long, in terms of removing trees. Obviously, much of the landscape was cleared in New England, and so we don't know the full story. And I think, again, falling back to these safeguards in terms of how we manage forests. I mean, we know that retaining a lot of that deadwood component, that downwood component, is important to building the soil. And so it's not, it doesn't need to be an all or nothing scenario.
Well, and as we keep coming back to, there's a lot of competing things to weigh here. An email just came in. This is from Joe, critiquing John Upton, who we had on earlier, who works for Climate Central and really does not like the impact of biomass on the climate. This person says, John Upton focused entirely on carbon emissions and saying, quote, you are not a champion of the environment if you heat with wood. I disagree. He neglected to include in his analysis other environmental and social benefits of wood heat, including the fact using wood for energy in New Hampshire supports sustainable forest management, reduces dependence on imported energy, and keeps energy dollars local than otherwise flow out of our state and nation. Joe says, as we seek to transition our energy mixes, we don't have the luxury of focusing on carbon emissions as the sole arbiter of good and bad. We need to be more holistic. Joe, thank you for that one. But then there's another email. This is from Dan in Dover, who says, why spend money and energy toward further development of wood fire instead of moving forward with wind and solar? Wondering what the jobs impact would be for wood fire plants versus wind and solar industries. So, Charlie, what do you think?
All of the above. And in fact, wind and solar is growing in the region. I'll simply point out that with wind and solar, you have jobs when the installation is built, but very few jobs once the installation is up and operating. Not so with biomass, where you're generating fuel, whether it's for heating electricity or combined heat and power, on an annual basis. So you have an ongoing sustainable economic benefit that, as long as we manage the resource responsibly, that doesn't exist to the same degree with wind and solar. So, and I'm not saying I'm not painting them as a negative. They're part of the mix. And in fact, probably the one renewable energy that is growing more rapidly than any other in New Hampshire right now is solar. And that's a good thing.
Let's take another call. This is Tim. Go ahead, Tim. You're on the air. Welcome.
Thanks a lot for having me on the call. And thanks for putting a great expert like Charlie Niebling on the program as well. It's a very complex issue.
And, yeah, that's what we're learning. Sure, go ahead,
yeah,
Tim.
And is increasingly divisive. A couple of points I just want to make, and I think Richard Roy did a great job, and I think that's the part that the John Uptons of the world continue to miss, is that biomass is not economically possible for biomass, even in the American Southeast, to cause rampant deforestation, just because biomass buyers can't pay that kind of money that would incentivize the men and women and families that own these stands of timber to completely deforest their stands. It's kind of a straw man argument. It's an argument that continues to be to give given a lot of wind in the sails in sort of the mainstream press, but foresters know that this is not a reality.
I know you said you had a couple points, and I do apologize. In the interest of time, because we are right at the end of the hour, I'm going to have to let you go there. But, John, I can see you want to jump in. Go ahead, please.
Just real quickly, I mean, I think it's policies and incentives that can tip the balance in too far one way if they do create that economic incentive that that causes an increase in harvesting that maybe wouldn't have happened without kind of those regular market forces. So that's, I think, one caution of this sort of blanket carbon neutral policy is that it could create incentives to do things in a harmful way.
So if it does scale up, there is a concern that wood harvesting would not be done in the way that it should be. Is that what you seem to be saying?
That's right.
Yeah. Charlie, go ahead. Final thoughts from you and where you hope this all goes from here.
Local and renewable is good. And in New Hampshire, you can feel good about wood.
Well, we got emails from a couple of people that I didn't have time to read, but a couple of people love their wood pellet stoves. Selena, also Karen, also Jane. So I just want to acknowledge those emails as well. Guys, thank you both very much for being here. John Gunn, it was good to meet you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Laura.
John Gunn, Research Assistant Professor at UNH in Forest Management. And Charlie Niebling, it was good to see you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Charlie Niebling, a partner with Innovative Natural Resource Solutions. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.